bold blue letters on a black background. EMI. One red and one blue, lines emerge which trace the circumference of two spinning discs. The spinning discs enlarge, scattering white letters. Nat Cohen presents for Anglo EMI Film Distributors Limited. Night, a little boy sleeps. His mother and grandfather stand over him.
Look out the front, Dad.
Yes.
We don't want him to surprise us.
No.
His grandfather leaves the room. The boy looks up at his mum.
Woken up in time to meet your daddy, have you, Jimmy? You'll be here soon. I'll bet he can't wait to see you. You're the one he always asks about.
Mary,
he's here.
Come on, love. Where's your flag? Here.
She gives the boy a little flag, a Union Jack.
Let's go and meet him, shall we? Hey?
The boy's mum leads him over to his granddad, who stands at the open door of their shop. Together they peer out into the night air. A man approaches up the dark street.
Go on now, you run and meet your daddy. Hey?
The boy starts down the street towards the man.
Run!
The man drops a bag at the roadside, and the boy, still clutching the flag, runs into his arms. The man picks him up and hugs him.
And here's me thinking you'd still be a baby.
A camel behind bars. The boy looks up at it.
Do. What with rationing? We had some nice days out. Went to the zoo once.
And half an ounce of Bacalax.
Settling in nicely, are you then, Mr. McLean?
Never liked the shop.
Oh, yeah, you remember Joe? How's this his boy? Would he never come back?
Bored him.
He sent a letter saying he was on his way. But he never come.
It was all too small for him.
I bet you never thought you'd have such a lovely boy waiting for you. Huh?
The cherubic little boy sails a toy boat on a pond with his middle-aged dad. They share a smile. Then the dad looks solemn.
Jim, you know I've tried to settle down again. I was looking forward so much to coming home. They've no idea.
His eyes rove pensively. Then he looks squarely at young Jim.
I want you to be a good boy for your mum and your granddad.
Back at the house, the man puts on his coat. Jim's mum looks drawn.
Mary, you have a shop and your dad and Jimmy.
Jim's dad reaches out to collect a suitcase, but pauses to look at Jim, who stands in his dressing gown watching.
Look after your mother for me, will you, son?
Jim's mum watches as Jim's dad takes the suitcase and leaves. Jim pulls the front door ajar and peers out into the street to see his dad walking away into the night. A frozen image of young Jim peering after his father. In white letters, a Good Times Enterprises production. That'll be the day. The image of Jim the child fades into an image of Jim the teenager sitting at his school desk. He scribbles a cartoon drawing of his bald teacher in his notebook.
With the outbreak of the First World War, we come to the end of our survey of the syllabus for this year's exam. Now, you all know the routine for Monday. I hope you've got all the facts firmly established in your minds, because at this stage, there's nothing much I can do to help you.
You've got the weekend free for last-minute revision. Oh, and I would like to remind you that that old favorite, outline the events leading up to the French Revolution, hasn't been said for 2 years, and so you never know. McLean, what did Britain gain from the Treaty of Utrecht?
Jim leans on his desk and stares out of the window.
Bay Territory, Gibraltar, Minorca, and Louis XIV agreed to recognize the Hanoverian claim to the English throne, sir.
Pay attention and fasten that tie, will you? I've nothing more to say to you. It's up to you. And so, as it's nearly 4 o'clock...
The class leap up from their seats as the bell rings. In the bike sheds...
Coffee bar, Terry. Well, did you hear what George Sherman said he did with his sister?
No.
On their bikes...
Tell ya!
Jim and his gangly friend Terry pull up outside a caff on their bicycles. Jim checks his reflection in the caff window and takes off his school tie before following Terry inside. Jim approaches the counter as Terry sits down at a table.
Two cokes, please.
Two lads approach Jim at the counter.
You're early. Nipped off from cricket. How's the band? Great. Dave's got a new Gibson for his birthday.
Yeah, his old one went up in a bloody great flash at the dance last Saturday.
Abused the old place. Nearly blew us all up. Two coffees, please, love. Oi.
Jim puts a glass Coke bottle on the table and sits down. Opposite them, a schoolgirl with shoulder-length brown hair lights a cigarette and smiles at Jim.
Got any money for the jukebox?
He swallows his Coke. Reaching into his pockets, Jim stands and approaches the jukebox. He looks at the girl.
You choose. See what your taste's like.
He puts coins in the jukebox and sits down with the girl and her girlfriend. Jim glances at the girl, then looks down and drinks his Coke through a straw. The girl leans forward at the table.
I don't know. Have to wait and see. What about you?
Well, I'm going as a receptionist to County Motors.
Is that what you call it?
Terry stands.
No, I think I'll wait a bit longer. See you on Monday.
Jim turns to the girl. He gets up and goes to the counter.
And a shilling for 2 sixpences.
Two older lads enter and sit down at the table with the girls. Jim pays for the drinks.
We're going to the Floral Hall tomorrow night. Are you coming?
What do you think, Cheryl? Can we trust them?
Jim joins them at the table. The girls look at one another and the lads stare at Jim. Wide-eyed, Jim smiles weakly, then gets up and puts his half-full Coke bottle on the table.
I'll be seeing you.
Jim steps out of the caff. He collects his bicycle and sighs, then pedals off. Jim arrives home in the empty back living room of the shop.
2 pounds of sugar, was it, Mrs. McLean? Well, as I was saying, we discussed it, and I think he realises now that it's university material. Well, that's all right for a hobby, of course. But you can't get anywhere without proper qualifications. And none of them seem to realise that nowadays. All the old pie-in-the-sky ideas.
A queue spills out onto the street, outside the Rex cinema. Three blonde teenage girls pull on their jackets as they step out of the lobby. Jim stares at a framed picture of James Dean on display outside the cinema.
Hello. Did you bring Terry?
No, he's swatting. Shouldn't you be?
No. Don't have to. I'm more clever.
More big-headed, too.
Oh, yeah, Jeanette, tell Terry he should have stayed with me last night. That's Shirley, sex mad. And her friend's a raving nympho.
At the breakfast table with his mum and granddad.
Okay. You're not nervous?
Oh.
Well, this is the first big hurdle. Oh, I wish I'd had your opportunities.
Just think. By October, you'll be at university. That'd be nice, wouldn't it, Dan?
Yeah. They'll make him get his haircut when he gets there, all right.
Look, Mum, I've been thinking. 3 years at university, that's a long time.
Oh, I don't mind making a few sacrifices.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean,
you should know you can't argue with your mother.
Denwood's, Mr. Armitage. Thank you. Bye.
Look, Mum, what I meant was, if I'm fed up now, what am I going to feel like in 3 years?
It'll soon pass. Hey, come on, look at the time. It's 8:10.
Jim rises to his feet and pulls on his school blazer. His mum smiles at him and hands him his satchel.
All the best, then, love. You can show him.
Jim and Terry cycle down a country road.
She saw it, the pictures on Saturday.
Yeah?
I've been working non-stop since Friday night.
They stop on a bridge over a river and glance down at it.
Water's getting lower. Bugger me, it's going to be a scorcher.
Jim rummages in his bag.
It's too bloody hot to be taking exams.
He retrieves a school notebook and throws it into the water.
Sod the Congress of Vienna.
He flings his other books in too.
Bloody Napoleon.
Then his bag.
Jenkins' bloody ear.
What are you doing, you daft bugger?
Sod it.
You've gone mad. Come on, I've got an extra pen.
I've had enough of sod in school.
He throws his school cap in the river too.
Go on, you go on.
Jim!
Tell him I got Jenkins' earache!
Smiling to himself, Jim cycles off down the country lane.
Madame de Pompadour was, I think, a silly old whore. She made a pie from Jenkins' ear and washed it down with a bottle of beer.
In his darkened room with the curtains half drawn, Jim fills a bag with his belongings. He puts something in his back pocket and looks out of the window at his granddad, who deposits a duck in a wire mesh enclosure.
You might at least let your mother know where you'll be. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Jim sits on the back of a moving pickup truck.
I shall have weeks of like father, like son. And for once, she'll be right.
Night. A row of buildings on the seafront. A group of lads with quiffed hair and leather jackets loiter on a flight of steps down to the beach. Carrying his bag, Jim approaches them. Ignoring them, Jim continues down the steps. One of the lads grins at his mate and nods at Jim. Eating chips from a newspaper wrap, Jim walks along the dark beach with his shoulders hunched. He sits down next to his bag.
Please, sir, may I leave the room? I might have said. No one would have heard. So I gave up, ran away, and hitched a roller coaster ride in search of fish and chips and freedom.
He scrunches up the newspaper and throws it. Rubbing his hands together, he stares up at the stars, then lies down, using his bag as a pillow.
Have you got a room?
A bedsit.
So the rent is £2.10 a week. You'll be able to manage that, will you? Well, in any case, it's in advance every week. No, there's a lavatory 2 floors down, and there's a bathroom on the first floor. If you're taking a bath, it's 2 shillings. Now, you have a lock on your door, so if you lose anything, it's no use coming moaning to me. And we have a very nice house here. So if you don't mind, you'll not be having any young ladies up here to entertain. It's really a very nice little room you have here. Like I say, that'll be £2.10 in advance.
On an overcast beach, Jim folds a deck chair and leans it against a stone wall by some steps up to the road. He wears a red satchel over his shoulder. Rubbing his hands together and baring his teeth, he jogs briskly over to another empty deck chair, where he pauses to watch 2 girls paddling playfully in the sea. He folds the deck chair and walks back up towards the wall. The 2 girls frolic in the water. 3 old women approach him.
Come on, concentrate on the job, never mind the girls. 3 more deck chairs over there.
We're not very far from the ladies, are we?
Oh, my God, just get it, okay.
The old women climb the steps up to the road. Eyeing the girls, Jim saunters over to the remaining deck chairs. The girls, a pretty blonde and a brunette in a plastic headscarf, smile at Jim and exchange a few words. The pretty blonde girl heads over to Jim as he folds a deck chair.
Here. Or is there anything to do here in the evenings?
She smiles at him, the wind sweeping her long hair across her face. He smiles back. Night. Jim follows the girls into a fairground where a carousel turns at the foot of a tall Ferris wheel. The girls look back over their shoulders at Jim and walk on. They approach the Ferris wheel and Jim pays a woman who stands in a ticket box. The colourfully illuminated Ferris wheel turns. The girls sit in one carriage, and down in the mouth, Jim sits alone in another. girls laugh and joke with each other as they walk away from the ride, ignoring Jim, who follows behind them. The blonde girl wears a blue and white striped dress with a pink cardigan draped over her shoulders. The brunette has her hair tied in a ponytail. They stride over to the Dodgems and climb into one. Jim pays to get to a Dodge of his own. The man is paying at the girl, and Jim shells out cash. Jim drives the Dodgem, glancing around with a smile as he weaves amongst the other drivers. He cuts in front of the girls, who get bumped from the side by another driver. The blonde girl laughs, as does Jim, who drives on. Walking together, Jim and the girls pass the fairground shooting gallery. The girls stop by a food stall, but Jim keeps walking. He stops briefly to look back at them, but then walks on. Finally, he stops and glances back. The girls look at each other with raised eyebrows, and Jim raises a hand in protest. The girls look at each other, shrug, and walk away. Jim's smile pales. He buries his hands in his pockets and walks off. Jim approaches the waltzers. He stands and watches as they trace a spinning orbit around a central booth. He spots the girls. They sit in a fast-moving waltzer chatting to an older guy who stands leaning back against the safety bar opposite them. Jim looks crestfallen. Jim watches blankly as they whiz past him. He glances up at the coloured lights illuminating the ceiling over the platform. In a dance hall, Jim leans against a wall and watches as couples dance to a live band. He watches their footwork. Back at his bedsit, Jim dances in his pants using a door as his partner. A picture of Elvis is taped to it. He turns, then clasps the doorknob and swings the door back and forth on its hinges. Day. Jim plays football with three boys on the beach. Dressed in a red coat and a pale headscarf, Jim's mum descends the steps and walks towards him. Jim looks up and sees her approaching. He passes the football back to the boys and walks along a pebbly stretch of beach to where she stands by a deck chair, holding a bag in front of her. They lock eyes. She sits down and looks up at him. He looks down at his feet.
Have you got anything to say?
He stares away blankly.
How much is it?
It's all right, Mum. You don't have to pay.
I see. Dishonest now, are you? How much is it?
She rummages in her handbag, then looks around and gives Jim a coin.
I won't be here long. I've got work to do. I can't afford to idle my life away at the seaside.
Jim kneels down and looks away.
I got your postcard. I don't know what you think you're up to. Why didn't you...
I don't know.
She looks away. Jim looks at the ground.
You've lost weight. That room you've got.
It's all right.
He stares at her.
Jim, look. If you came back home that...
No.
She reaches out to caress him, but he recoils. Taken aback, she looks around, then reaches in her bag and retrieves a box and a brown paper bag. She gives them to Jim, who looks down at them.
Anything else you want? From home, I mean.
There's my records and record player.
Yeah, I might have known.
She glares at him, then reaches in her bag. She takes out a purse, from which she takes paper money. She thrusts it at Jim.
You might need this.
She springs up from her seat and hurries away, leaving Jim to pick up the money, which has fallen to the ground. He watches her leave. Night. Jim's at the fairground shooting range. He aims a rifle and pulls the trigger. He picks off a couple of tin cans. He looks down the barrel of the gun and shoots. The shot bursts a balloon. A uniformed policeman peers through an open gate, then walks through it. A drunken Jim staggers along the pier holding a bottle of liquor. The policeman approaches on a bicycle. Jim sets the bottle down on the floor.
The morning stars no longer shine. The dream is gone I thought was mine. There's nothing left.
Caught anything yet?
Jim looks at the policeman.
I feel ill.
Kicking the booze into the sea.
No, I'm drunk.
He points a finger.
I'm too close. I'm a madman when I'm drunk.
I see. Where do you live, son?
Ranelagh Grove.
That's handy. I'm going that way. We can walk together.
Oi! I broke in here, you know.
That lock on that gate's never been too smart. Shall we go?
The policeman turns and starts walking. Jim lingers, then starts after him. The policeman collects his bicycle and they walk together.
Good night, have you?
It's my birthday.
That's nice.
Must be lonely for your job.
It can be.
Your mum gave me some money to buy something with. I'm a madman when I'm drunk, you know. She wanted me to go to university, but I didn't. Hey!
A poster for the Dallas Boys.
Wouldn't it be great? I mean, to be famous. Not like that. Like Elvis. Must be great.
They walk on. Back in his dimly lit bedsit, Jim stands by a small wash basin, around which the paint peels off the walls. He strikes a match and lights a hob beneath a saucepan, then drops the matchbox on a shelf and walks over to his fireplace. Crouching, he takes a slice of bread from a plate on the floor and holds it over the flames on the end of a fork. He looks up, then sets the bread back down on the plate. He gets up and goes to the door. He opens it slightly and peers out of it. Terry hands him his record player.
Well, about time.
Terry looks around.
Well, bugger me. Is this all you could afford?
Jim sets up his record player.
You're crawling with, please.
Jim grabs a record.
To hear this.
Jim removes the record from its sleeve, which he places back on the mantelpiece. He crouches down and puts the record on the turntable. Terry sits down.
I got three distinctions.
Really good.
Why did you do it?
Do what?
You know.
Oh. I did it to see the books float down the river. What did they say at school?
Oh, they thought you'd gone mad. You know, you didn't come in the afternoon. The head went round to your mum. She blamed me.
Jim shakes his head, then springs up and crosses the room.
You must have been daft, you know. You can't sell deck chairs the rest of your life.
Don't worry about me. Something will turn up. It just takes time. I might finish up being the first British rock and roll deck chair selling millionaire tycoon.
Rain beats down on a makeshift shelter constructed from deck chairs and a tarpaulin sheet. Jim sits inside it, writing.
I am alone.
and loony man who lives upon the sand. When I left home, I thought I'd be the leader of the band.
He tears the page from his notebook. He scrunches it up and chucks it, then sighs to himself.
Bloody hell.
Jim walks through a holiday camp with Mike.
Hello again, campers. This is Radio Sunshine, just reminding all you super, suntan, sunny people that the first inning for dinner is now being served in the yellow canteen.
One of the lads from the kitchens got caught climbing over the fence from Camp B last night.
Oh, tie him with the trifles.
Should see him. These two chicks from Bristol or somewhere. Right slags. And they didn't even get a sniff.
Do you know them?
Yeah. Like I said, useless. I wouldn't even touch them with yours. That is, if you've got one. I mean, we haven't seen much evidence of it, have we?
Well, you know, I mean, don't worry about me. Just as some people are a bit more choosy where they put it.
All I'm saying is, with all these birds round here lusting after it, and you're acting like a queer in a brothel.
Come on, we'll be late for work.
A busy dance hall. Punters watch from their tables as couples jive and men in red jackets collect glasses. A blonde teddy boy in a silver glittery jacket sits smoking a cigarette.
And now, we're all very happy singing Idol. Stormy Dippy.
He puts his cigarette down and approaches the mic. Wearing a red jacket, Mike delivers drinks to someone's table. He collects glasses on a tray and carries them back to the bar, hastily weaving around couples on the dance floor.
Table four, okay? Two browns and a baby sham.
Stormy Tempest smiles at a girl in the audience.
The stars and the skies. Hoping that you are not telling me lies.
Dressed in a red jacket, Jim collects empty glasses. He crosses the dance floor and plonks them on the bar, where Mike stands watching the band. Jim hands the barman a ticket.
Number four.
Stormy Tempest croons into the microphone.
They've been coming here for years, you know, it's the birds. Should see their chalets like Roman bloody orgies. No future in it, though, is there?
In what?
In being a typhoon, I mean, where will it get you?
No, not smart like us.
Jim glares at Mike and heads off with a tray of drinks. Three burly men watch as Mike delivers drinks to two girls dressed in skirts and sleeveless blouses. The bustier of the two girls looks at him as she sips her wine. He heads back to Jim at the bar and nods in the direction of the girls.
Those two down there, they'll go.
The girls exchange a few words and look over at Jim and Mike. Jim glances over at the girls. They're looking his way. One of them smiles, the other has her eyebrows raised. The band finishes, and the girl to whom Stormy Tempest has been crooning claps and smiles. He sits down next to her. Jim smiles to himself, then looks back at the two girls. They're now chatting away with two guys. Jim curses his luck. Wearing only his pants, Mike washes his hair in the sink.
This is mine, you can have the other one. Oh, where's that shampoo? I can't see a bloody thing here. Tonight's their night, lucky cows.
Jim reclines on his bed.
It doesn't look
like much to me. We'll have to split them up. I'm not having you watching me on the job.
Mike dries his hair with a towel, and Jim sits up.
What about if they don't fancy us?
That one with the big tits.
Her name's Sandra.
Oh, she looks a bit like Sandra Dee, doesn't she?
Mike rubs his hair with the towel and takes off his Y fronts.
Oh,
All right, smart arse, it's not that funny.
Mike has a tattoo of a love heart on his bare bottom.
That was when I was at sea, wasn't it? Got pissed. Well, I wasn't actually at sea. I used to work on the ferries between New Brighton and Liverpool. One night I was out of my school and my mates talked me into it. Bastards. Come on, it's not that funny.
Mike puts on a shirt and combs his hair in the mirror.
I've been coming here for 5 seasons, you know. Yeah? Like a holiday to me. Well, after 10 months on the bloody road with the fair, you need a break.
What do you do on the fair?
Dodgems. Good place for pulling the birds. Quick tickle, see if they go, and then round the back, get me end away. That reminds me. Let's go and order our slices for tonight.
A crazy golf course. A golf ball is chipped into the funneled end of a pipe. It emerges from the other end and drops into a circular depression. Sandra and her friend from the Stormy Tempest gig play crazy golf opposite Jim and Mike. Mike knocks the golf ball up a little ramp towards the pipe and makes the shot.
Good practice this, you know.
Good practice for what?
Getting things into holes.
Busty Sandra chips the golf ball up a ramp, but it rolls back again. Mike swaggers towards her.
It's best if you hold the end in 2 hands, you know.
Sandra smiles. She grips her golf club, wiggling her bottom as she lines up the shot. She watches as Mike returns to Jim.
Lovely ass, that's Sandra.
Hello again, Captain. Ready to sunshine, just reminding all you suntan, sunny super people that the first sitting for dinner is now being served in the yellow canteen. So hurry along, all you happy, hungry holiday makers, and now here's some great news for all you young ones. Tonight's the night for the Rock and Roll Express. Your weekly driving contest will be held in the main ballroom.
He sounds the right spanner.
The Blue Grotto at 10 p.m.
Great!
Sandra's skinny friend wears scarlet lipstick and has her hair tied up. Mike prepares to chip his golf ball towards Sandra. He does so and saunters over to them.
All right then. 10 o'clock tonight in the Grotty Grotto. You and Air and me and him.
Can you both jive?
Can we jive? Woo!
That's right. It's your lucky day.
Sandra stares at Jim.
Okay.
At the dance hall, a sign reads Rock and Roll Contest. Amongst the judges are an elderly man and woman, a blonde beauty queen, a thin bespectacled woman, and a vicar. On the dance floor, couples jive as Stormy Tempest performs on stage. The three burly men who were watching Mike chat to Sandra sit quietly with their eyes fixed on the dance floor, where billowing skirts provide tantalizing glimpses of dancing girls' thighs. Jim dances expertly with Sandra, and Mike ineptly with the skinny one. Stormy Tempest windmills an arm. His mic falls at an angle. A redcoat approaches Mike and the skinny girl, who then stomp off the dance floor in a huff. Mike sinks into his seat. They each stare sour-faced at the dance floor. Mike glances at her, then blinks and turns his eyes to the band. The judges wince at the sound of feedback. Stormy Tempest smiles gleefully. The dance floor has thinned out, but Jim and Sandra are still dancing. Mike turns to the skinny girl.
What are you drinking? Baby fan. Oh, and a packet of crisps.
One dance and she wants the world.
Mike goes to the bar. He has a card bearing the number 7 stuck to his back. A redcoat approaches Jim and Sandra and says a few words. Jim smiles at Sandra, and they walk to the side of the dance floor, where she sits down next to her friend. She smiles at Jim. Jim saunters over to Mike at the bar. Smiling, Jim looks him in the eye. Mike sulks. Smiling, Jim turns to look at the last remaining couple in the competition, a gangly man and a petite woman. A redcoat stands at the microphone, clapping.
The winners once again are number 25, Derek and Deirdre Heathcote. Now, well done, folks. Now, of course, Derek and Deirdre come from that marvellous, wonderful, fantastic, incredible house of Windsor!
Right then.
Outside.
It's, you two in ours and me and you in yours. Right? Party's over at 3.
The girls break off. Mike reaches inside his jacket. A bottle of liquor.
Where'd you get that?
Give her one for me.
Come on if you're coming.
All right, love.
Mike walks off. Jim smiles and starts after Sandra. He overtakes her and unlocks the door to his chalet. They step inside. Jim closes the door behind them and turns a light on. He collects two mugs, which he then rests on a shelf beneath a vanity mirror over a small sink. Sandra takes off her shawl and sits on the bed by the window as a silhouetted couple pass outside.
So what's the use of arguing?
You must be out of your mind.
I'm not out of my mind. I've told you before. Thank you.
Jim unscrews the cap from the bottle of liquor and pours some into each of the two mugs. He screws the cap back onto the bottle and, smiling, he glances at his reflection in the mirror. He strolls into the darkened bedroom, where Sandra looks up at him. He hands her a drink. Doe-eyed, she looks up at him and sips the liquor. He sits next to her on the bed, and they make eye contact. She sets the mug down on the floor, and kicking off her shoes, she slowly reclines on the bed.
Bet you have a different girl here every night.
Jim quaffs the liquor. He sets the mug down on the floor, and gazing at Sandra, he slowly removes his jacket. Sandra lies back in the soft light falling through the curtains at the bedside. Jim lies down next to her and looks into her eyes. He looks up, momentarily distracted by the sound of the baby's cries, then looks back down at Sandra. They lock eyes. He leans in close and kisses her, then runs his hand over her blouse and fondles her right breast as they kiss. His hand drifts down between her legs.
I wouldn't let anyone else, you know.
Jim looks up again, distracted by a couple passing outside. He opens Sandra's blouse and leans closer to her.
Let anyone else do that.
She arches her back and Jim undoes her bra. He slides his hand beneath it and caresses her plump right breast.
There's a baby crying in chalet, room 26. Room 26, a baby crying, Captain.
Hurry up down there
and stop the baby crying.
You won't tell anyone, will you?
He draws her knickers down around her thighs, and she kicks them off. Leaving his shirt and tie on, he takes off his trousers and pants. He mounts her in a febrile clinch. He rolls onto his back. And breathing deeply, they both stare at the ceiling.
She always comes so quickly.
Sandra sulks. Day. Wearing a white t-shirt, Jim lies back in bed. Mike lies in the bed opposite him reading a comic.
What's your bird's name?
Don't know. Never asked her.
Mike stares at the comic.
What was Sandra like?
You know, not bad. I've had better.
Jim takes a pull on a cigarette. Mike looks up from the comic with a tight-lipped smile. At the empty dance hall, a member of Stormy Tempest's band is putting an amp on stage. Jim approaches him.
Ah, good on you, Mike. Sorry, it's just strength, you know.
Jim sets the amp down and leans against a metal pole by the drum kit. He taps on the tom-tom, in time with the pianist. Draped over a chair, smoking a cigarette, Stormy looks over at him.
You don't play the drums, do you?
No, mouthful. I mean, harmonica. Why?
Well, I was just wondering.
I think what Mr. Tempest is trying to say is that he'd like to get rid of me. But you can't, can you, Stormy?
The man grits his teeth as he demonstrates his skills as a drummer. Stormy gets up and walks away. Jim turns to the drummer.
Songs? What? I mean, instead of always doing crummy Cliff Richard songs, you ever thought about writing your own?
No, not really. I can't write. Anyway, you've got to be American to write rock and roll songs nowadays. Well, it's the words, isn't it? Words.
Looking at his watch.
Take it away, son.
Jim puts his hands in his pockets and walks away. He looks up and sees two blonde girls staring in through the French windows. Back at his chalet, Jim lies in bed with one of the girls. He writes on her back with lipstick.
When first I got my end away, I wasn't much good, I'm ashamed to say. But night after night, I worked at my art, as often as not with a different tart. Practice may not make perfect, but it's practically perfect fun.
What are you writing then?
A love letter.
Oh, I bet.
Jim McLean was here, September 59.
Lovely scoreboard.
She looks puzzled. He writes the number 15 at the top of her back and circles it. Jim and Mike sit on the grass, watching as a man swims lengths of an outdoor pool.
They should have told me when I came here they would put me in with a sex maniac. You haven't been able to keep it still for a minute. I thought I was a bastard, but you...
Smiling, Jim takes a carton of cigarettes from his pocket and lights one.
This fair you go to?
Yeah. I'm off next week. I'm just pissed off at being locked up in here.
Do you reckon there's a job there for me?
Stud Farm's the best place for you.
Jim smirks and exhales a cloud of smoke. Mike swigs a bottle of beer.
Any more for the merry-go-round?
At the fairground, a bald guy in a plaid shirt strides over to the Dodgems to find Mike and Jim driving around in them. He shuts off the power, and the Dodgems stop moving.
When you two little lads are finished playing bumps of Daisy...
Just testing the cars, Jack. We don't want any nasty accidents, do we?
We'll take your pal and go up Dorwin on the coconuts.
OK. Come ahead.
Jim and Mike walk off.
Watch him, Jim. He can be a right twat. I once saw him knife a big spade because he wouldn't get off the children's hobby horses.
They approach a coconut shy, where a middle-aged woman in a woolly jumper is taking cuddly toys from a box and laying them out on a shelf. Mike throws balls at the coconuts.
Down, a quick nibble round the back of the tent, eh, Doreen?
I'll go nibble yourself.
Oh, Christ, commoner's muck. But a heart of gold. Ask any of the lads. Thought you might need some help.
Look, piss off, both of you.
Jim picks up a cuddly toy and shares a smile with Doreen. Mike notices. Mike strides off. Jim follows him into a dingy room.
Not much, admittedly, but it's home and it's free.
You're right, it's not much.
Christ, what do you expect? Listen, all we're here for is to work and sweat and work and fiddle. Right, fiddle. That's the game. Everyone knows it. So don't you go and cock it up for the rest of us by being honest. It's a shilling for them, and a shilling for you. And wear your pants with the biggest pockets. They know it goes on, but as long as you're not bloody obvious, it's all right, they turn a blind eye. That way, they pay us sod all, and we have to work all the hours God sends. The easiest way is to work it so that you've never got the right change. The cars are always started before you've taken the money anyway, so that when you get round to giving the change, you have to jump on the back of the car and stuff it into their hands while they're busy looking where they're going. And for Christ's sake, don't pick on anyone in a gang or you've had it. Don't forget, it's one for you and one for them. One for you and one for them.
Night. The fairground is busy. Mike and Jim stand aboard the backs of moving Dodgems, chatting with the drivers. Jim hops off and looks around. His hair is longer and he's sporting sideburns. The Dodgems stop moving and the punters climb out. A man and a boy remain in their Dodgem. The man attracts Jim's attention.
You've got to weigh it up, whether you think you can get away with it or not. If it's half a sheet, you usually can. A pound only can get tricky, but it depends on the customer. If he's left it too late, you can always say you've never seen him before. I'll back you up. Then it looks as though he's trying to do you. It's all a matter of style.
Jim calls Mike over. Mike sends the man on his way, then saunters over to Jim and looks him in the eye. They share a look, then go their separate ways. Morning. Jim hands a wooden horse up to Mike, who stands in the back of a lorry. Mike props up the wooden horse.
Better class up there.
Jim swigs from a bottle of beer and hands it up to Mike, then smiles and gets back to work. Night. Jim and a girl lie kissing on a patch of grass.
I must go now. My mum will go mad.
Jim lies over her. He pauses for a moment, then carries on kissing her neck.
No.
She tries to fight him off, but he pins her down and rapes her in the cover of darkness, only yards from the bright lights of the busy fairground. He finishes, and the girl starts to whimper. She puts a hand over her mouth.
You won't tell anyone, will you?
Back at the caravan, Mike lies back under a blanket reading a comic. Jim takes off his dirty clothes. Mike looks up from his comic book.
Been doing some gardening again, have you?
Jim sits down on the bed and pulls off his shoes. Mike looks up again.
What, that little schoolgirl? Christ, she was insatiable.
Mike gives Jim an unforgiving look.
Well, you're no bloody Jesus. All I'm saying is pick on someone your own size.
Stony-faced, Mike continues reading.
Piss me off sometimes, you do.
In a darkened snooker hall, Mike breaks, barely scattering the balls.
Tough.
Sodden cue.
Didn't they teach you anything in that orphanage?
Yeah, they taught me how to look after myself.
Jim rounds the table and lines up a shot.
It was great. Well, the first one was... There was this matron organised a birthday party for me when I was 8. She made a cake with icing and candles, you know? She was called Miss Wakefield. She used to smell of hospitals, but she was okay. She used to call me Mickey Rooney because I was so little. Well, and then she got moved on somewhere else. Makes you tough, though, independent. When I was 14, my mother came to see me. I told her to piss off.
Here, hold on. You told me your mum was killed in the war.
You know, I lie a lot.
At the Dodgems.
I gave you 10 bob.
I don't think so, Chief.
I did not.
Bloody right.
Oh, come on, the pair of you, piss off.
Tell my friend. You had it.
Mike strolls over to Jim and nods in the direction of a Dodgem.
Keep your hands off.
You, anything.
To the girls in the Dodgem. Jim locks the caravan door and strolls out towards the fairground. He stops in his tracks and looks up to see Mike being ruthlessly beaten by a gang of 4 men. 2 of the men restrain him, whilst the other 2 hit and kick him mercilessly. He grimaces in agony and falls to the floor. Looming over him, the men continue to pummel him. Jim staggers around a truck and strides off. He breaks into a run and heads for the lights of the fairground. Looking back over his shoulder, Jim makes his way towards Doreen's coconut shy. He slows to a walking pace as he nears the stall.
Where's Tweedledum?
He's working. Should I give you some help?
You're almost too late.
They smile at each other. An ambulance pulls into the fairground. Jim and Doreen watch from a caravan window. Jim hangs his head. Jack stands looking up at Jim, who crouches in the rafters above the Dodgems, fixing a speaker with a screwdriver.
A collarbone done for, and 24 stitches in his forehead. I can't understand why he wasn't missed, being gone so long.
Jim carries on working.
What about you, then? How'd you fancy working on the whip? I was going to move Mike, but don't expect we'll see him for a while. Think you can handle it? Of course. It can be a bit dangerous, but the man is better.
He looks up from his work.
No sweat. Okay.
Jack walks away.
Thanks.
Jim smiles to himself and gets back to work. A dismal grey day. Jim stands in a phone box.
Hello? Hello, can I speak to Terry Sutcliffe? Hello? Terry? It's Jim. Remember?
Polishing a motorcycle.
Mouth organ by James McLean. The mouth organ tremored, jumped a scale or two, and quavered at the sight of her crotchet. With trembling vibrato, he undid her discord, and percussion in softly, ran a quick cantata saying, I'll do you no harm, Monica.
Day. Terry wanders into the fairground. He's dressed in a long coat and sports a goatee beard. He saunters over to Jim, who looks up from the motorcycle with a cigarette between his lips.
Well, where's the revolution, Fidel?
Jim and Terry stroll past three girls loitering by the waltzers.
It's the same every night. Yeah. Amazing. Woo! Wouldn't believe it.
It's pretty much the same at college.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, there's never any reason to go short.
No. But what's the social life like?
Well, the dancers aren't bad. Hey, I tell you what, as you're off, do you want to give it a try?
Jim lights a fag.
A couple of trips on the whip, then we go over to your place. See that? Perks of the job. So don't leave your change inside your pants pockets, otherwise you're going to lose it. We'll be all right.
Terry sits in a waltzer. The waltzers start moving. Jim hops over the rotating arms to which the waltzers are attached and climbs aboard one in which two girls are seated. He sits back on the safety bar and chats to them as the orbiting waltzer accelerates. Jack watches from the field. A short-haired man in his 50s approaches him, smoking a cigarette.
One of these days.
Oh, he's a good operator.
Yeah. Oh, the best ones, the dead ones.
The waltzers rotate at speed. Terry closes his eyes and sinks into his seat. Jim chats away with the girls. The waltzers slow to a stop, and Jim goes over to Terry.
All right. Come meet a couple of ladies, I'll fix this up.
Terry looks ill. Later...
So you didn't fancy yours? Well, I didn't fancy mine much, but she didn't make me throw up.
They walk down a corridor towards a dance hall. Terry enters ahead of Jim and pays a guy as Jim hangs back in the doorway. Young-looking couples dance around to live jazz music. Jim's face drops as he looks around. He steps inside and joins Terry, who notices his expression.
Everyone here likes jazz.
Jim nods solemnly.
Oh, come on, admit it, rock was just a craze.
Bollocks. They'll be playing rock years after all that crap has been bombed and banned.
Still playing your mouth organ, then?
One of two prim-looking girls waves at them from a table. Jim follows Terry to the table, where a pretty blonde girl with long hair sits opposite a brunette.
Suzanne and Charlotte. We all take economic history together.
Oh, Jim and I used to be friends at school.
What are you doing now?
Jim looks at Terry. Jim lights a cigarette and leans back in his seat. Terry grabs a few empty glasses from the table and strolls off. Suzanne and Charlotte stare at Jim.
What exactly do you do on the fair?
Jim exhales a cloud of smoke.
I mean, I pretend to be Superman on the whip and do a death-defying routine.
He stares at them, tight-lipped.
I'm the bloke that everybody wishes would fall into the machinery and get his kidney twisted round his ear.
Charlotte bites her lip and looks at Suzanne. Jim's smile pales and he leans forward.
Seriously, I'm just there to write a novel. It's nearly finished. It's all about life in the fairground. It's called Vanity Fair.
Terry returns with drinks.
Jim the Whipper had a big dipper.
To Suzanne. Suzanne stands and Terry leads her onto the dance floor. Jim rests his boot on the table. Averting her eyes, Charlotte sips her beer. Jim stares at her and chews a fingernail. She glances at the dance floor, then looks back at Jim.
Look, I must go. I've just seen some people. You know.
Charlotte picks up her drink and walks away. Left on his own, Jim takes a deep breath, looks at his drink on the table, then gets to his feet. He strides towards the door. Terry glances round, watches Jim leave, and continues dancing. At the fairground, a young woman wearing a headscarf and with a string of beads round her neck slips off the scarf and watches Jack walk over to Jim on the whip. Jim switches off the power. Jim turns to the young woman.
Got a room?
I've got a bike.
Jack shakes his head and walks away as the young woman follows Jim to his motorbike. The bike stops outside a house with wooden banisters on the inside staircase. The young woman leads the way into the house. Jim follows her up the first few flights of stairs. She turns to him.
It's at the top.
She stops the moment they're inside the room and faces Jim, who kisses her as she flings her arms around his neck. He presses her back against the wall. She walks across the room. She switches on a light and pulls off her top. Leaving her bra on, she crosses to a cot.
Is that your baby?
She kisses Jim.
Room downstairs isn't open. Come on. I think it is slow.
Jim pushes her away. He runs out.
You must be very proud of yourself.
Jim's at home. He smokes a cigarette as his mum pours tea. She places a cup with the sugar already in it and stirred, and a saucer in front of him. He raises his downcast eyes to look at her.
How you've got the nerve to come back here after 2 years, I don't know. Turning up like that in the middle of the night. Selfish, that's you. Never a thought for how I might be getting on. The old postcard when you found time to remember you had a mother. It's not been easy, you know. What with the shop and your granddad the way he is.
Granddad's had a stroke.
How long has he been like that?
6 months. You've no idea what it's been like. Not knowing he's alive or dead.
What happened to him?
He's a lot of work, you know. And I've never had a husband or a son to help me. And I managed without your father, and I'll manage without you.
Jerry's done well, you know.
I saw him.
He's at the university now. A credit to his parents. You were always cleverer than him, and you know it. But oh no, not you.
Jim's at work in the backyard.
If you did come back, what would you do? And how can I be sure you wouldn't be off again just as soon as the fancy took you? Wouldn't be so bad if you got your hair cut.
His mum hangs out socks.
Could always go to night school. Still not too late.
Jim, wearing a checked jerkin and pale blue jeans, checks his hair in the doorway of a hairdresser's shop. He turns to see Jeanette in the window. She grins and waves at him. He walks away. Her smile fades. At his mum's shop, he's painting a sign. She brings him a cup of tea.
You know, Mum, we could really do things with this little shop.
I've been doing things with it for over 20 years.
Modernisation, that's what it's all about. Maybe if I traded the bike in for a little van, you know, part exchange.
Perhaps you should have gone to art school.
When this goes up, we'll have them queuing down the road.
His mum smiles ruefully. Jim's at a roller skating rink. Hands in his pockets, he moves with ease. Jeanette, clutching the barrier, falls to the floor. Jim skates smoothly over to tower over her. She looks up and sees him as he bends down to help her up.
You should sit down somewhere else for a minute.
He helps her off the rink.
I thought it was you the other day, outside the salon.
That's right.
We didn't know you were coming home.
Well, I wasn't.
Jean, another blonde, knocks on a window from the rink.
I came with Jean. She's Terry's girlfriend. You remember her?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
He sidles past Jean, who looks at the beaming Jeanette and smiles at her. Jim skates to the middle, then smiles as he sees Jeanette, hugging the sides, come back onto the rink. He joins her.
Jean's had to go, but I thought I might stay and put in some more practice.
I'll give you a lesson. I mean, if you like. Right then, turn round. That's it. Left foot first.
He holds her hand and has his arm around her. He lets go and she falls.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way.
Jim sings to the record in his room.
In my arms, know the magic of her charms, because I want girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone.
Jim's motorbike sits in a field by a river. Jeanette is sitting on the grass and Jim is skimming stones over the water. He looks over his shoulder and smiles at her. Jeanette's face is solemn. She puts on her cardigan. She dabs her nose as he saunters over to her and lies down beside her.
Why did you bring me here today?
Oh, I don't know. Granddad was busy.
I told them at the salon I got flu. I never thought that was going to get us here.
They look at the bike.
Yeah. It's going tomorrow. We're getting a van to help with the shop.
Never thought of you as a shopkeeper.
Never thought of you as a footballer.
She lies on her front. He does the same. Jeanette closes her eyes. Jim reaches over, pulls the hair off her cheek, and kisses her. She opens her eyes. Jim moves away. She pushes herself up and watches him. Mrs. McLean's in the garden when Jim pulls up in a maroon van with McLean's General Store written on its side. Jim gets out.
That's it. With that mum, we move into the big time.
Well, I suppose that'll be very nice for taking your granddad out for drives in.
The van's in a field. Jim is in the front kissing Jeanette.
The girls at the fair, what were they like?
He shakes his head. Jim kisses her forehead.
You can if you want to.
Once again, he shakes his head. She smiles and gives him a hug. Jim, in a white grocer's coat, is stocking shelves.
Well, bugger me.
Terry, in a blazer, shirt and tie, and clean-shaven again, stares at Jim.
Didn't your mum like it, then?
Oh, it's nice to see you doing so well.
Licorice or lollipops?
Jim continues with his work.
Why'd you come home? Well, you might like to think that I'd seen the error of my wicked ways, or that my pride was hurt when you made a right prick out of me at the Students' Union. You might like to think anything. Truth is, it was filial affection.
Of what?
Yeah, I was missing me mum, feeling very prodigal at the time.
What about Jeanette?
What about little Richard?
My mother doesn't like you going out with her.
How long holiday have you got?
A month.
That'd be nice.
Hey?
I mean, for Jane, your girlfriend. Good-looking girl you got there, filling out nicely.
Terry, tight-lipped, lowers his eyes. Jeanette and Jim are at the cinema. She buries her head in his chest. He whispers to her ear, and she looks up at him with her big eyes. She smiles and nods. They stand up and he leads her by the hand out of the row as the actress on screen falls to the floor clutching her bloodied eyes. Jean and Mrs. Sutcliffe are creating floral table decorations. Terry, in blazer and cravat, comes in and takes Jean's from her. He passes his mother.
Well, I'd better go and make sure the bride look her best tomorrow. I wish you'd never set eyes on him.
I'll come with you, Mum. See you later, Jean.
Hello. Hello, Mrs. Sutcliffe. All right.
Mrs. Sutcliffe nods at Terry, and they both leave the newly arrived Jim.
They'll be okay by tomorrow.
She still thinks Jeanette's pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
What about Terry? What does he think? He's pathetic.
Jean sets down another floral decoration. Jim toys with a single flower, then holds it out to Jean.
Ooh. Do you want to come for a drink with me tonight?
Haven't you got a stag party?
Joking. 7:30, under the clock. All right.
I don't know.
He leaves her with the flower. At home, he rushes downstairs. His mother's putting in rollers.
Don't want any tea, Mum?
No?
No. Stag night. Won't be late.
Jeanette's in her bedroom.
It's all right.
She's tending to her fingernails. Terry comes in, picks up a greetings card and sits down behind her. She watches him in the dressing table mirror.
You don't have to, you know.
In a pub.
Jeanette would go mad if she could see me here with you.
Oh, I think she'd understand.
Why on earth are you getting married?
I don't know. I mean, why does anyone?
Why doesn't someone believe me? I am not pregnant. He's never laid a finger on me.
No, she's not. Anyway, let's not talk about tomorrow. Makes me nervous.
But you don't know what he's like. He's girl mad.
He's not. He's settled down.
Always fancied you, you know.
Jean and Jim are in the van.
Strange. Think that tonight's my last night of freedom. I don't mind. It's just that it's a funny feeling.
You don't know him like I do. It's no good telling me he's changed. He'll never change.
It's more comfortable in the back.
None of you will give him a chance. He's settled down.
Is this what you do with Jeanette?
Now, now. Come on, Jean. Here's my last night of freedom.
But Jeanette's my best friend.
He's just no good.
Well, he's your best friend.
And I know him. He's a randy sod.
In the back of the van.
Am I better than Jeanette?
Oh, shut up.
Oh!
As best man, I'd just like to say that knowing Jim as I have done for nearly 20 years now, I can only say that Jeanette is marrying a good, honest, reliable bloke and the best friend a man could ever wish for. Right.
Now I'd like you to join me and drink a toast to the lovely bridesmaids.
Jean is one of the bridesmaids, Mrs. Sutcliffe.
It's not right, you know. This was just not good enough for her. It should never have happened. She was always a good girl. I wish she'd never set eyes on
their own just yet. With me for a little while until they get on their feet. But with her working at the hairdressers, they should be able to afford something very nice quite soon.
Jeanette and Jim do the rounds. Terry comes up to Jean.
Where were you last night when I came round?
Jean sips her bubbly. At the McLeans, the newlyweds are in their bedroom. Jim walks around the bed, then flops down on his back on it. Jeanette sits demurely on the edge of the bed and looks at Jim. He smiles at her and she responds. Morning, some time later. Jim wakes. Jeanette comes out of the bathroom, wiping her mouth.
Told her it was safe, I did. Though I didn't know for sure. Nor stopped to consider now that it was legal. And we two were one. Funny to think we'll soon be three. Or maybe four.
£10 or... You'll go for the £10.
Jim's mum's doing Jeanette's hair in front of the TV.
Windermere, Coniston, Ullswater are... Windermere, Coniston... Windermere, Coniston...
Jim's reading the new musical Express.
Did you go after the job at Elliot's?
Jim looks up, then returns to the paper.
We could do with a little less thinking and a bit more doing from you, young man. Is that too tight, love? No, that's fine.
Jim tosses down the paper and puts his jacket on. His mum puts a roller in Jeanette's hair. Jeanette is glued to the TV. Nobody looks at Jim, who sighs, picks up books and walks away.
Highest mountain in Wales is called...
Jim's in a hall where a band are playing on stage.
What's the band like?
Not bad. Devonair.
He's AP.
Sure.
John, a caretaker, takes Jim's books. Jim approaches the stage. Having checked out the band and their languid movements, he strolls towards the exit. After the birth, Jim holds his baby.
Jamie, Mr. Sutcliffe.
No, thanks, I've had sufficient.
Mr. Sutcliffe?
No, he won't either.
Mrs. McLean takes the baby from Jim.
Come on in.
There, my boy. Oh. Well, that was the look of you in him, Mary.
Yes?
Must be quite a handful for you, having a new baby in the house.
Oh, no, he's as good as gold. Just like Jim was at that age. We don't know we're born with him, do we, Jeanette?
Why, you couldn't be a good boy for your granny Sutcliffe, are you?
Were you as good as gold, then?
Jean's come in.
I hope you're not letting everybody run around after all the time, Jeanette.
You know, I never had a daughter of my own, but your Jeanette is just what I would have wanted.
Look at those eyes.
Then. How's the van going?
Jeanette, can't you see Grandma Sutcliffe?
It's not.
That's a shame.
I told Albert we should have bought a business, didn't I, Albert?
It's not doing as well as it should.
I always impressed on Terry the importance of qualifications. Terry wants to get engaged after his finals. So it looks as though we're going to be relations.
Well, bugger me.
Looks as though we're going to see quite a lot of each other.
Shall I have him now?
That will be nice, won't it?
Keep him a moment longer.
You know...
Not too heavy.
Terry and you. You make a lovely couple.
It's probably a bit damp.
Jean glares at Jim, who's been uncomfortable with her presence, and she goes. Jeanette watches the exchange. Outside, he's working on the van when she comes over.
What's Jean on about this afternoon?
What?
Jean, this afternoon.
Oh, nothing.
Before we were married, did you ever, you know, take her out?
Jean? Oh, come on.
Did you, Jim?
Jean? No, never.
I wouldn't have minded. I just wanted to know.
Jim busies himself with the van. In the same hall, another band are on stage. The lead singer in a red teddy boy suit is fairly lively. Most of the audience are sitting or standing around the walls. Only two girls are dancing. Jim's there. There's a bored expression on most faces. Jim grimaces, then leaves. At home, he's lying in bed, scribbling in a notebook.
What are you writing?
Oh, it's nothing.
Let me see. You are funny.
She takes it from him and starts to read.
At first I weave daisy chains around your toes, hung cherries from your ears, and got you drunk on buttercup wine. But the wine curdled from too much cream. My cherry love's turned to stone, and now the chains have turned me crazy. Daisy.
Daisy.
And there's no love for you. At last, I'm leaving before the nettles get us. I don't know what you're on about half the time.
His head on the pillow, Jim stares into space.
What about the nettles getting us anyway?
Oh, I don't know. Suppose it's because I'm a bit of a prick.
A soldier in uniform passes Jim, who strolls down a street. Jim pauses momentarily in front of a musical shop with guitars and a drum kit in the window. Further on, he enters a caff.
Hi, McLean. How are you doing?
Former schoolmates.
Well, how's the group?
Fantastic. Most of the boys you know left. Well, there's only me and Stuart that you know now. We're semi-pros.
Yeah, we'll be professional as soon as we get a decent amplifier.
We've got a recording session next week.
Yeah, London Palladium the week after.
That's good money then.
Not bad. £20 a week we got at Butlin's.
Christ.
You used to play the harmonica, didn't you? I saw a group last week. One of their blokes played an harmonica. He weren't bad. You should have kept it up, you know.
Well, I did. Yeah, I used to be with a band called Stormy Tempest. But, you know, it wasn't going the right way, so... Anyway, what are you doing around here?
We're playing the Floral Mall tonight. Why don't you come down and see us?
Well, maybe I will. I'll get time.
The Floral Hall is where he saw the other bands. This time, the audience are riveted and a lot are dancing.
Wow, everyone, I love to dance.
Jim checks out the audience, which includes a lot of single young women. One of his mates on stage nods at Jim. A park with a pond and a motorized little boat on it. Jim pushes the pram around its perimeter, he and the pram reflected in its calm surface. The little boat with a St. George's flag on it is stuck at the edge of the pond. Jim bends down and turns the boat round to face a little boy at the far side. Jim sees himself as a little boy at the pond side with his father.
Jim, you know I've tried to settle down again. I was really looking forward to coming home.
Go on now, run and meet your daddy.
Here's me thinking you'd still be a baby.
He never liked the shop. Bored him. It was all too small for him. You should never have come home.
It would have been easier if I'd never been away.
Have you thought where you'll go?
No. Perhaps when I get somewhere, you know, make something of myself. I'll send for you and Jimmy.
No.
Look after your mother for me, will you, son?
Jim, carrying a suitcase, meets his mother on the stairs. He walks past her.
He's leaving us.
Mrs. McLean rushes into the living room. Jeanette, carrying the baby, follows her. Jim, in a red plaid jacket, picks up his suitcase and walks out. Mrs. McLean lowers her eyes. Jeanette chases after him. Jeanette stands at the door with the baby. Mrs. McLean takes her grandson from Jeanette, who runs after Jim. Jim hands over money for a second-hand guitar priced at £9.10.
Sure you'll be able to handle it?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
ITFC audio description by Sam Clark.
That'll be the day when you say goodbye. That'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie. Day.
you give me all your loving and your turtle loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby. Still, you tell me maybe that someday we'll all be blue. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. That'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die. When you say goodbye, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, when Cupid shot his dart, he shot it at your heart. So if we ever part, then I'll leave you. You sit and hold me and you tell me boldly that someday, well, I'll be blue. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. That'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a